Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Brace yourselves for unknowable horror, because the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program has returned. Yes, Nerdy Show's beloved RPG audio drama of black comedy and Lovecraftian horror is back with an all-new series, a chilling tale called The Terrible Secret of Lot X. Head to CthulhuMystery.com or find the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program wherever you procure fine podcasts. Succumb to the maddening call of Cthulhu.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. So last night, we did our first recording of Liam's campaign.
Yes.
And it went well.
It was quite fun.
I'm excited to talk about issues that we notice during it.
What, that I hate Doug?
You don't hate Doug.
I know I don't hate Doug.
I just love that Doug is still Doug.
Oh,
even
forever.
Though he's Grandin, he's still Doug. Why are we doing this? Because we're murderers?
I thought it went well. The mechanics portion, a lot of it's not going to be included. Just explaining how it works. As nervous as she was, I felt like Cap dropped right in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, her role play was definitely top notch.
Yeah, 100%. I wish I could have intoned earlier that, like, go ahead and offend my character. I won't care. It's not going to hurt my feelings. Because Cap apologized to me during it. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I should have, you know, this. I stole, like, the moment for the, it's like, it's great. Like, yeah. Keep going.
We're
going
to play off that for a very long time.
Yeah. But yeah, I like our party dynamic. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I think listeners are going to really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I love that, once again, I am able to control way more story than I should be. Like, when I made, basically, the Skimmer religion is on my shoulders.
Oh, yeah, no, actually, I do want to talk about organic world building. We did a bunch of stuff. We're just like, how does this work? Oh, no, it's never come up before. Let's just decide now.
Yeah.
I like the idea that Skimmers hold little bottles full of, like, their home body of water. Mm-hmm. That's really, really cool.
That is cool. Max calling out, very accurately, the Space Pope.
Yes.
Yes.
I do want to make those bases, the stacking ones for conditioning markers. Did you see that?
Yes.
That I posted?
I also have magnetic spray paint if we need.
Magnetic spray paint?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Just it's more likely to stick to metal?
It's Krylon magnetic spray. It's for making boards to, like, stick letters to for kids and stuff.
Oh, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. I also have a bunch of iron filings.
That you're going to blow in the face of your enemy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fourth level pocket sand.
That's something I'm thinking of after how last night went down with Frixa, who the mechanics I'm very much enjoying. It's like, when I take a step down a path, what am I even going to pick? Because I look at the breadth of paths, and I'm like, Zealotry seems like a good fit. Radiance, step one, seems like a good
fit. Is the implement weapon core or step one?
Step one.
Mm-mm.
In Zealotry.
That's dope. Yeah. That's useful in a lot of builds.
Scoundrel, step two, get pocket sand. Or command.
Change direction with your character to meet the role play aspect you want to fulfill.
But which is, all of those are appropriate, role play wise.
Yeah.
It's role play for him to throw pocket sand at people.
Like,
it's very appropriate.
Because he is.
You're blinded.
Just watching him evolve, like, he is C-3PO, but then also just a straight up merc scoundrel.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so got a lot of fun stuff to get into. Just as a quick thing, I'm going to update. I'm thinking about changing the rule book. The way it's set up right now is that each page of your path is its own step so that you can just print out that page if you want to.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking maybe I'll format it. Like, each one of those is kind of like an extension of your character sheet where you can fill in values.
Okay.
So you print out the page and you just write in it. I don't know how complicated that will make things, but for us right now, it will make something simpler. I don't know if it makes things more complicated down the road.
Mm. But like, we could try it out. For publication?
No, for... We're a ways from publication.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, what would complicate it?
Oh, if I'm step 12 and I've got a character sheet that's 12 pages?
That you wouldn't have to always flip through. I mean,
You can put the heavy hitters up front. You've got all this extra stuff, but yeah.
You'd sideboard it.
So I think that's something I want to try, because we're going to have to, with the shifting damage amounts, you want to be able to have just a quick reference as you're playing to what you want to roll. So terminology I'm going to start using is the ability or the weapon will tell you its damage class, which is, you know, 1, 2, 3 or whatever, and then you will add your level to that to find out the damage tier. And then the tier is what you reference. And that's the dice you throw when you make a hit. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. So in order to balance things, I do want to introduce negative damage class, because let's say it's like a laser beam that does one big hit and there's an explosion that does a D4 of damage. When you get the ability, you want the extra damage to be a D4 to everybody around it. Well, if it's step 2, let's say it's a daily ability. If you just get it at step 2, that means it has to be a damage class 0. And then you add your level, which at that point would be 1, because you were level 0 when you started, to get a damage tier of 1, which you'll be a die for. Sounds, I think I made it sound more complicated than it is. Does that make sense?
No, but you don't need negative. You need a 0.
So, okay, step 3. You get something that you want to do a D4 of damage at that level. It has to be damage class negative 1.
Okay.
To be a D4 when you get it.
What if we just, after step 1, never use a D4 ever again for anything?
Well, because the D4 is just demonstrative of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but then you could always start at D4.
Well, I mean, we could just say it's a D6 I'm talking about and still have the same problem a step later.
But then you could just make it a D4 and then you would step up a step and it would be a D6.
Well, then just keep adding steps until what I'm saying makes sense. Because
yeah, but I'm saying I don't understand where there'd be a situation which something past step 3 where you're using a D4.
Bleed damage, burning
bleed
damage.
Bleed damage, baby. Right.
Lots of little extra things that we can add on. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it complicates things unnecessarily. I think the idea is alien, of using a negative damage class. Adding a negative to your level.
I think it works fine. It just, if we are ever going to actually use it.
Yeah. Well, I think we'd use it immediately. Rogue Star. I think we'll have to use it on that, if I'm not mistaken. What's the secondary effect of Rogue Star?
I think it's just straight composure.
It's not straight composure.
But it's definitely not a D4.
No, that's what I'm saying. Hold on.
Is that on caps?
No. It would only be on mine. I don't know where mine is anymore.
No, I'm sorry. Your flame orbs would have to be negative 1 damage class.
They're D6.
Correct.
So you could start at a D4. You could start at tier 1.
Nope.
And then move it up. You're right, because that'd be 3.
Yeah. So flame orbs would be negative 1.
What if we just have your level is your steps, and then the core doesn't count? Because
The core doesn't count.
Yeah.
I know
the core doesn't count. But if we're arbitrarily deciding level, the idea that your level is 1 minus your total amount of steps.
It's not, because of Tolden.
You're right. But for most characters, it will be 1 minus your total amount of steps.
Sure.
When you could just not have a level 0 and not refer to anything as level 0.
Why?
If you're inventing your own measurement of the system, the idea of having a level 0, all that does is have to remember that it's negative 1 for most characters.
I think that's more complicated than just saying when you start, you're level 0.
Be like, oh, I'm step 3. I'm level 3. Cool.
No, but then you're step 2 in this thing, step 5 in that thing.
Yeah, and then you know your total amount of steps that you've taken is your level.
Unless you're a Tolden.
In one of the 8 races, yes. In the system, that person has to remember minus 2.
What I don't understand is what your objection is, because what you're proposing makes things more complicated.
I'm saying if they're both arbitrary.
They're not arbitrary.
If the leveling convention of numbering them can be completely arbitrary. You could start at level 10, it wouldn't matter.
I'm saying it's not. Is what I'm saying. It's not completely arbitrary. It has to work mathematically. And it has to work mathematically in a way that is simple and easy to track. So here's another reason to start at level 0 is that way it's easier to track your progression, among other things, which includes
damage tier.
When you get an attribute plus, we'll say every 3, so you just divide your level by 3.
Okay.
And you're done. You get it. Not to mention, I kind of want to talk about skills, how we're going to progress those. I think I've got a couple ideas.
All right.
I think I want skills to progress, or professions rather,
mm-hmm.
to progress on fixed leveling. So as you take steps past a certain amount, like maybe every second step you get to increase a profession by plus 1, which means you can add a second one and give it a plus 1. Or maybe do it every step, although that seems kind of fast, because they're very powerful professions.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it every step. And every other, that does seem overwhelming until you think about skills in literally every other role-playing game ever.
Yeah, well, you just say, oh, I'm on every even level, I get a plus one to a profession.
Mm-hmm.
On every third level, I get an extra attribute point.
Yeah.
That's easy. Because now you're just looking at, what's your level? I'm level zero. Well, how many steps am I going to have to take to get an attribute point? Three.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. But I don't think negative damage class is a problem. I don't know. I am sensitive to the fact that it's strange.
Well, it's not that I think it's strange. There's definitely an internal logic to it. I'm just saying that it's going against the vocabulary of most other games.
Yes.
And that is going to be something you're going to rub up against.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, man, this whole concept really does that,
yeah,
too. I don't think we can get away with any classic term. We have to use distinct terms.
Yeah, maybe level is not even the idea.
I think the problem is that level is more representative,
mm-hmm,
than anything else that I can think of what it actually means. The only difference between our system and others is you start one lower, which is more like it is in real life.
Yeah.
You're not one till you're one,
mm-hmm,
you know, in years. Like, you're on your first.
I think in Kingdom Come Deliverance, you do start it at zero. You start with nothing in every skill.
It makes sense.
Yeah. The concept of zero is pretty groundbreaking.
So we're basically changing the world, is what Max is saying. And yeah. I agree. So everybody fine with those terms? The
damage tier.
Damage class, level, damage tier.
Mm-hmm.
Just so we can write that on a sheet.
I did roll 2d20 last night, and that was pretty sweet.
Oh, for the
idea of
rapid fire?
Eventually getting to a damage point where you would roll. Yeah. It's pretty nice.
25 damage. That's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
What is the average damage of 2d20? It's 2 plus 40, 42. 21 is the average damage of, mm-hmm, 2d20.
Very nice.
Yeah. And if you use it as a piercing weapon, you roll a 1 on a d20, you do 40 damage. That's pretty good.
Not if they're damage dice.
I don't think we do 2d20 in our damage.
No, I don't think we ever get there.
I literally think I skipped it because there was something that was like 4d6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's more fun to roll.
I remember the original argument was a couple d20, and I'd never done it until last night.
Oh, no. Yeah. The problem is that not that rolling 2d20, it's that d20 is more associated with doing an action,
yeah,
not the result of an action, and that it's a large amount of damage locked away in one die.
Yes.
Yeah, which it's volatile,
mm-hmm,
but still kind of fun.
Yeah,
I think the volatility is the reason we're switching to the damage tier system over using what Pathfinder does, where, oh, well, I rolled, you know, 2d4 for my damage, but I'll always get that plus 25 at level 10.
Yeah.
That total lack of volatility, like, it takes the drama out of the dice roll for your damage. I want to make a change for Not So Fast, because it came up last night while we were playing.
Uh-huh.
Instead of saying affect allies that you're adjacent to, it should affect enemies that you're adjacent to that are attacking an ally, regardless of whether or not you both are,
yeah,
adjacent.
Because I think having to be adjacent to your ally
And the enemy
is, that's limiting.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of ways you could set it up, but, mm-hmm, to get there is more difficult than you would think. And the idea that you wouldn't be able to do that literally looking at the enemy's back, going like,
yeah, Not So Fast, it got you in the knee, you know,
yeah,
while you're trying to do that.
Just like brush your hands against their neck while they're not looking.
Oh, yeah. Little,
mm-hmm,
finger up the spine. Okay, I like that. And I want to talk about balance, too. Frixa,
uh-huh,
has an ability I wasn't able to abuse last night, but I had fully intended to see if it was too much. I'm not sure if it should be changed.
Okay.
But I want to explain why it sounds dangerous and why maybe it's not.
Mm-hmm.
His invigorate ability to shield himself or anyone else for his composure can only be done once per turn, but it's effectively, it's armor for one attack, basically.
Uh-huh.
And it builds his retribution score, which was used to nuke somebody. There's no current rule against him casting it on every turn, even if it wasn't depleted, and putting it on multiple people. There is a rule where it says he can't stack it on himself or on anybody. He can't, mm-hmm, stack it on a single target, only refresh it, but is there a reason why he can't put it on everybody? The first reason I'm thinking of is his retribution score will balloon if there's an AoE attack. The second reason is that you can kind of over-prepare for a fight in that way. But the reason why maybe it's not that big of a deal is because to put it on everybody, it would take 4 rounds where none of them has to take damage.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't think it's going to be that big of a problem. And if you set up a situation in which everyone is shielded, you have to keep reapplying it, but every now and again the tank doesn't get hit and you could throw it on someone.
Mm-hmm.
And you set up a situation in which they all get AoE attacked and the DM allows it, you you pulled off a giant mechanic. You both have to be fairly complicit in it, and you have to work so very hard.
Like, you just set up the game Mousetrap.
Yeah.
Yeah, like. Which kind of happened last night, but only against Frixa.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, he was healing himself and other people at the same time with no issue. Let's see if it comes up and becomes an issue, because if it's so rare that the dice would fall in such a way that would that this could happen, then I don't want to worry about it. But if it becomes an issue, and I will try to break it. I'm going to try to, and we all should be doing this, frankly. But I think the first change I would see is change to a move action to apply it instead of a swift. That would limit it in ways that it wasn't limited before. Or the bigger limiting factor would be leave it as a swift, but it moves from person to person as you apply it.
Or it degrades at the beginning of your turn or whatever.
Well, if you just put a time limit on it, then it's not an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you put a time limit on it, it's like a time limit of 1 minute. You're not going to cast it while traveling, especially if it's a move action. But I don't know. I want to think about it, but I want to try to break it to see how we can really...
Even the idea of just having 4 extra damage and dealing 4 extra damage per character in your party at step 1, level 0, step 1, is solid by 3. That's...
Not that great.
Much, much less useful.
Yeah, and I think we'll need to come up with reasons for it to scale well, because if we're only getting an extra attribute point at every every 3 steps that you take, is that enough, or is it just wasting your time? You know what I mean? Does it scale well?
Or should we decide that certain parts of paths need to be internally scaling?
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, should that be something that does get better internally in a path later on, because that's a specialization they made?
Mm-hmm.
Because 4 damage a turn, just jumping in, is that a core?
It's core.
That's core? All right.
Now, to be fair, I had to put 4 in composure.
Yeah, that makes it more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But even situations when we make core stuff better later on, as long as we give enough stuff while we're doing it, we can juggle that.
Yeah, and do we want items to make up the difference? Do we want items to fill in the gap as people progress? Like,
I think that's part of the answer.
Yeah.
I feel like if you have to do this, this, and this to get this, it's not as overpowered as you can just do this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a situation where you take the time to set it up. That's fine.
Yeah. If you start, you know, if you get a bunch of items that give you a composure boost, you choose composure every time. You even do a fun, you know, there might be a fun interplay of paths that let you kind of skirt around some stuff.
The issue with the way it's currently worded, so as intended, I'm worried about things, but there's a issue with the way it's currently worded where there's no expiration, there's no time limit, which means that there's no reason why it wouldn't be on all of us at the start of a battle, which is not appropriate. I can already tell you that's way too much, because the whole cleverness of setting it up is gone. You just say, everybody's got it. Then if something opens with an AoE, I got 20 retribution, I'm going to nuke somebody.
As soon as you put a time limit on it, when it would just be ridiculous to keep it refreshed all the time, it would just eat away at you. It's more going to be a thing that you would do. And as soon as you put a time limit on it and not everyone has it, the idea that you would get it on everyone in almost any encounter isn't zero, but it's close.
Yeah, I couldn't do anything but keep it on myself, encounter. But that, again, it was a non-standard beginning of an encounter. But they're all kind of non-standard.
I don't think we've had a standard yet.
Give it somewhere you know where you're going into, and you know it's going to be a fight, so you got time to position yourselves and stuff.
We've been ambushed a good number of times, I think.
Oh, no, but not even Andrew. I mean, when we don't have a standard start, because it's a lot of, like, we're having a conversation. I guess we're fighting, okay.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Invigorate. If I put it, so let's say I put it on Grandin.
Uh-huh.
For 1 attack, his armor is effectively 10.
Yeah.
I think that the Invigorate should be before their armor is calculated. So if they hit him for 10, or let's say if they hit him for 9, the Invigorate's gone. I don't get 1 left.
No.
So even better, the Invigorate value is 4. The shield I put on him is 4.
Uh-huh.
He's got 6 armor. If he gets hit for 4, the Invigorate takes it before the armor does.
Yes.
Right? Otherwise, there's no use for putting it on a tank.
But it's also, the way that I imagined it was already that way, where it's like, you know, a holy glow. It's not an internal thing. It is a physical shield around him.
Okay, so I'm going to change the wording to better reflect that. Doug brought up shield bashing, but he has questions about it that I want him to raise when he's here. Unless you guys...
Well, I was thinking, what is like a club? Like bashing damage for a club, what does that give you?
I think it's a D8.
A D8? So a spear is D12, one-handed
two-handed.
Is a D6?
Yeah.
So would a shield bash maybe be a D4, half of what a club gives you? Because you're hitting like a club, same
yeah, I would
bash
say
damage,
it's a
but it's one-handed?
Yeah. So if you go step one champion, would you double strike with your shield? I don't think double strike works with a shield.
No.
No, because...
Imagine trying, like, even with a buckler.
Yeah. No.
Try it. Like, I don't think you can.
No, it's a... Your concentration is on the shield.
Yeah. I think shield bash should be a thing, but I think it should be a path thing. It should, you need to train and be aware of how to use your shield martially.
Maybe just put it in Citadel, maybe earlier, and then switch up things. Because it does seem like who else is going
to...
I mean...
Oh, but the whole thing is, I don't even know if it needs to be that early in Citadel.
Shield bash?
Yeah.
I mean, even step two or it would be early enough for it to be like, this is, yeah, I'll try to do this. Shields are already so good.
Mm-hmm.
How useful is... we're thinking reality.
Yeah.
Okay. When do you shield bash? Like, you have to be up close enough, and the only reason you're shield bashing is because that hand isn't free. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can give, like, a shield bash ability, and that's got to be good enough. Maybe an at-will. An at-will attack action.
Mm-hmm. Or... No. Okay, what about this? Shield bashing, only an opportunity attack, but it's an opportunity attack that foregoes damage for an effect.
Kind of like a tail whip.
Because you're not using shield bash as an actual offensive thing. You're not choosing to shield bash if you have everything ready for a regular attack. Mm-hmm. You're shield bashing because you swung wide or you did a big attack, and then there's an opening. Uh-oh, like, I have to do this now. Mm-hmm. So you could do something where maybe it stuns or it reduces their movement or it reduces their attack or something.
I'm trying to think, even
as
in
an,
like,
opportunity attack.
Even in, like, a wushu martial arts style movie where you're just laying about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I could see you using it instead of your weapon is if you hit somebody else with your weapon and you bash somebody else adjacent to you. That sounds like you could do...
I think it's definitely more of a buckler thing.
Yeah. Well, I think there's still... You could imagine, I mean, if you got a tower shield, it's going to take the wind out of somebody if you just check them with it.
But there's so many other uses for a tower shield than bashing.
Frankly, it's weird that the way that tower shields are used in RPGs isn't as a row of people who have tower shields.
It's to create a gap, because then you're focusing on the person and you don't realize the other three people on next to him are focusing on you.
Mm-hmm.
It would be cool if you could have a spike buckler and then put and venom your spike buckler.
That could be cool. Spike bucklers complicate things.
Oh, yeah. Everything complicates.
Yeah, it's true.
The world of humans stabbing each other with things is just
spear
so
still,
rich.
Spear still wins.
Yeah, exactly.
Just simplify it, bring it down to the spear again.
Especially when you just make the spear longer.
I've got three spears on me. Mm-hmm. Different lengths.
There's a reason Switzerland was never successfully invaded until mechanized shit. Like, there's a bunch of rocks and a bunch of guys with spears, and there's not really anything anyone can do against that.
Good luck at
it. And not enough land to graze horses.
Yeah.
So, well, okay. Well, then we'll deal with shield bash and stuff when Doug is here, because it's kind of his... He's raised a couple questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I can think of using a shield bash right now is to hit a secondary target, because otherwise it's effectively something like a bull rush or whatever, and you could do that whether you had a shield or not.
Yeah.
You guys ready to get into step four?
Let's do it.
Dip our toe. So we went over decay before, our thoughts on it. Let's get into the meat of that one. Let's address that first.
Well,
before
that, I want to just have a very basic, what is step four? Like, what's the goal of step four?
Good question, because step three introduced a lot of things, but they were different for every path.
Yeah.
I think
it was utility, right?
There was a lot of utility added.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that should stay the same. There should be things that are utilitarian in these steps.
I'm saying another scene ability.
Maybe. Because, well, think about it this way. You, depending on what path you pick and what race you are, you may have four.
Yes. But if you go straight path, you will have one of the thing that you do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless you're Tolden.
unless you're Tolden. Yes. Unless you're Tolden is going to become a catchphrase.
No, it's actually not unless you're Tolden, if I remember, because every race except for Tolden gets
one
per scene attack, and then you get one at step one.
Yes.
So everybody starts with two. Let's talk about what we talked about with decay, because I'm not opposed to this, because I think making another per scene attack will actually simplify this if we're limiting it to that.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm not saying limiting to just a per scene.
Well, let's deal with decay first because it won't be that. But we this ability can be per scene.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think about it in those terms. So we talked about this before. Listeners will be familiar that we talked about being able to raise your own undead creatures. I'm thinking, what's the first thing you get? Something that just does melee damage?
Yeah.
Do you get something that's a tank?
No.
Because I'm thinking, what are the three archetypes that you would get? I think they would improve as you... Or you get access to more of them, right?
Range, tank, melee. I don't think you're doing someone who's... maybe eventually something can be a conduit through casting. That's got to be...
Yeah, that, I would think that would be the furthest down. What if we make it so that... Mechanically, I'm trying to think, how should we limit it? Should you be able to have no more than two, but you can only create one per scene of this type?
That's not bad.
Mm-hmm. So of this type. So if we just say... I wrote down Berserker, but... You know, just something that does melee damage.
What if it was about also control? Like, you could create something and not control it, but then later on, maybe you could control it?
I don't know. I think...
I don't want to... Then, one, who's controlling it? Are you as a player putting more work on a DM? That's not...
I get that.
Great.
Yeah. I was just thinking of the mirror within a mirror within a mirror. If you could create a caster, could they then in turn create a caster?
No, it would be a conduit. It would be a conduit for your casting. Okay. It would still be your.
Now we're bringing up an interesting point here. So if I have two mm-hmm. that are on the board, let's say, okay, step four, as a per scene attack, I can create one from the corpse of an enemy my size.
Yeah,
I can create a melee berserker that uses bones as claws or something like that. Just from its raw biomaterial. When I do that, it's completely my thrall. It's mindless. I've got two of them. On my turn, can I do things while they attack? Maybe they just have low damage and they can be things for people to focus on, but they can attack every turn on my turn? Like, if they can only do a d4 of damage, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'll still choose to do it.
Yeah. It's something you got to get through to get to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, this would be their damage class would be -2.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's fine, right? Their health could be half of yours. Just a simple rubric for that. So you get to create this kind of thing. You can create as many as two of them. And then maybe step five, you can create...
Oh, I also like the half of health being... Their health being half of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have someone who also is multi-stepping into something that's a little beefier, your dudes are beefier.
Yeah. And I don't want to get into the undead as its own type of enemy where, like, holy spells hurt it. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think... If your healer casts a heal on them, they get healed. I think that's reasonable and simple.
They're made of flesh.
Yeah.
The flesh and bone is bound.
Right. You through your effort, are able to keep them in the state of undeath, which magic treats as they're alive.
Yeah.
So what happens if you fall to zero?
I think that would sever the cord.
Yeah. Or even unconscious, asleep. If you're no longer...
Well, I think asleep, they're not just going to attack your party.
No, but the will that was holding them together is not there.
Mm, I don't know.
Like, if it was a ritual and it became its own thing, yes. But if it's a thrall, if it's directly under your control, yeah, no. The thing that is animating them is you. You're the energy that is animating them.
So what if then it's they're your thrall, they don't attack your allies, they only do what you tell them to do unless you die?
I don't think they stay up with you.
So you have to create new ones every day?
Yeah.
Because then if you ran into a necromancer with like a real party of bodies, it would be a terrifying display of power. Not just this is a thing I can do.
Yeah, you're not making a thrall and then keeping him around for days and days and days.
See, I don't know. I think that's the flavor. Like that you're a necromancer. You're in command of death. You're building your own little undead army.
I think that's ritual magic more than it is...
Really?
Something that you can do in that's power. That's not something that affects a moment or an encounter or a combat thing or an event you're doing. That is accumulating raw power. That's ritual.
Okay, well, hear me out.
Okay.
I'm going to make an argument against this from a mechanic standpoint. They bring very little in terms of damage, except for tripping off your secondary stuff that you do, right? We're just talking about these berserkers or whatever, okay? So let's say you can create as many as two when you first get this ability.
Mm-hmm.
Step five, you can create three or one tank. Step six, you can create four of them or two tanks or one creature that has like an aura of ongoing decay damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then step seven, you can create two of those, six of the other ones, three tanks or a caster that has its own specific spells and abilities.
Ooh, a mobile zone of decay.
Right, but now, like, we're thinking to get as many as six of the just the cannon fodder version, six encounters in a day. You guys, the only time you ever did that was in the dungeon at the end of that.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. I think you could have them and they like dig a hole and sleep in it or something. I don't know.
I'm not saying.
I think we can balance around it in a way that it's not crippling. Because the whole flavor of decay is ongoing damage, and creating this undead horde is a way to create ongoing damage. There's zero burst associated with any of this.
Yeah, but the thing about this is, okay, you can make one encounter. I'm saying that you could make that during combat. You could pre-make them. Like, if you have a combat and then you wait around 30 minutes, you could pop some more dudes up and have them running around with you. I don't want a situation where, like, if you fall down and you're unconscious, man, you know, you're leveled, you're done. You don't have.
Well, I think they, in other systems, when this happens, they operate on a kind of autopilot, following your last command to the best of their ability. When you die, they just fail. They just dry up. I think that's fine because, honestly, I really like the idea of a necromancer who's able to have like their own little undead horde and servants and like work. You know, they do things. The more intelligent, the more they can do. But it costs a lot to be able to do them in the sense that like that player is going to have to be on their game. And I think we can do this by simplifying the rules by making each one of these things its own template that they can just the rules are understood. They're simple.
Would we maybe like a ritual every 48 hours to sustain them or something?
I don't know. I don't feel like it takes much to sustain these mindless things, like especially because the better you get at this, the easier it should be to sustain them.
Okay.
And the fact that if you've gone six steps to get the caster level one, you can't have the other ones. Like we've already said that they cost the other ones.
Ah.
You know, you can't maintain the smaller ones if you have this one because you have to choose.
Okay.
Like if you think about a bucket of points and each of the berserkers.
He's played Warhammer. He knows what.
Yeah, but each of the buckets is worth, let's say each of the berserkers is worth 1 point. Maybe you have to spend 3 points to get a tank. You have to spend 4 points to get the, what would you call like the?
The plague bringer.
Judas goat. You know, like that kind of, the Judas sheep that just wanders in and brings plague. And you'd have to spend maybe 6 points to get the caster. Well, that makes it so that it's self-balancing in that way because your attention expands. Your ability to maintain them expands as you take steps.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I just like the idea, the flavor of having your own little undead horde.
No,
as a
totally.
Teammate.
Oh no, I think that's dope too. I'm just saying,
but
in combat you are reduced to zero hit point, you don't even have to die. If you fall down,
but you're also saying sleeping.
Oh no, that's I said unconscious, but I didn't. I mean like knocked unconscious, like forcibly ceased.
I don't know, because well, here's the thing: you're knocked unconscious in combat. So here's where that's a way bigger disadvantage that is harder to balance around. You're knocked unconscious. All of them go away. You get up. You are half the character you were.
Yeah.
A scoundrel gets knocked unconscious, gets back up, has a condition, sure, but is every bit the same character.
Mm-hmm. Would it be too complicated to weave that into conditions? Like, if you get a concussion, maybe you go back down a step till you're healed, or if you get amnesia, you lose your...
It's a great idea. In practice, in D&D and Pathfinder, it's referred to as negative levels, and you take level damage. It is a nightmare to keep track of.
Okay,
it's ridiculous.
All right. Yeah. So yes, the idea mechanically, if we're playing a video game and it did all of it for us, fine. But the amount of bookkeeping it takes for like this 30-minute encounter is just nonsense.
I'm all for necromancy. So
yeah, I don't know. That's how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. I haven't implemented anything, but I'll make like a little spreadsheet.
Would the raw material have to come from a dead enemy?
No.
Like in the battle?
No.
Okay.
So it could be a horse, if there are still horses.
But it would have to be, it's not something you could just rise up out of the ground.
No, it would be something.
It would have to be some kind of material.
Biological material. So if you're fighting a robot.
Yeah.
No, can't do it. It can't be a plant. Mm-hmm. It has to be some kind of animal. It should be unsettling. But I mean, imagine you're 4 steps to K. Mm-hmm. You're a badass.
Yeah.
Like that's, you're pretty far into badass territory.
Like if Champ died and you're all of a sudden like, rise.
I can create 3 from this body.
Champ's real big. You could probably make 2 tanks and an extra dude out of him.
With the armor and everything.
So I'll put together some stat blocks, proposed stat blocks for these creatures. Mm-hmm. And then we can talk about what maybe or may not be too powerful in the moment. And I'll do it in terms of dice damage that they can do and like armor and stuff at the level that you get them. And I want to make a template.
That would be cool.
In the book that you can just fill in and keep with you.
Yeah.
So that way your GM doesn't have to wait on you to figure everything out. Like every time that
you know what a tank is.
Exactly.
Functionally, stat-wise.
Okay. It'd be fun to name them, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
like, you create a berserker, he's like, this is Jerry.
This is Jerry, my berserker.
AoE takes out Jerry, you're like, Jerry, no!
It's you and your 3 archers that you always...
Archer would be fun. I feel like that's later. Like, that's your caster. That's semi-intelligent. Maybe caster's, like, top end.
Caster is top end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe instead of making only the casters be able to be your point of origin of spells... There's just, you take, an, eventually...
They'll get their own abilities.
One of the features that you get, like, step 7, step 8. You're like, oh, you can now use them as a point of casting. Mm-hmm. Like, you cast a spell, and it just erupts from them.
Dope.
So even your berserkers, you could just pop, you could have a berserker, and his only job is to run out and explode.
Just to be within that 10?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It could be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. None of those is a per scene attack, unless we make... the ability to raise something in combat a per scene attack.
Mm-hmm.
Which works for me. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm fine with that.
Well, even if it's just at a per scene power. As long as it's in the same ballpark and it doesn't feel crazy. Like, I don't need everything to get the same exact thing every step.
Right.
They just need to be, you know, playing the same game.
Yeah, you can do it once per scene if you've got the time. Which, if you kill 3 enemies, you want to spend that on raising a tank. If that's the ratio we end up using. Okay. We feel good about decay, at least the idea.
Yeah. Right, the idea is solid.
I'll try to mock some stuff up and then we'll bring it to next design episode. Command. I was thinking, what about an intervention ability when an ally drops to 0? Something just, you can command an ally to move their speed to get to them and maybe just their presence immediately stabilizes them so they don't lose. They can make a free attack and they stabilize.
Mm-hmm. Momentum.
They don't gain death score.
Yeah.
Automatically.
Is that as good as having an army of skeletons?
No.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about just step 4. Is it as good as 2 skeletons?
Yes. That's the question I'm asking. That is the question I'm asking.
Yeah. That 2 isn't an army, unless you play that game Army of 2. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking also a feature, some sort of coordination feat. Like when X happens, you X. You know, like something like that.
Yeah, that... Both of those together, depending on what X and X are, could be more than enough to be good.
Okay, so what... This is stepping back into my comfort zone with command, because like if I could choose my favorite thing to play in our system every time, instead of trying to test out things, I would just go straight command, always. Like that would be my favorite.
What about a take-the-shot basic melee attack?
Please explain.
Take-the-shot can be a...
It is. I thought it was only a ranged attack.
Nope.
Oh, it is a basic melee?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never mind.
Anyone can just do their basic.
Okay.
It's just usually ranged. Just
yeah.
That would be a good addition if it wasn't already there.
Or maybe
needed.
Both. Sure. Like if the archer or caster attacks something and then someone adjacent to that same
Is take the shot step 1?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could do the...
kind of a focus fire on one.
Yeah, or we could do something like stabilizing charge and an improvement to take the shot. We could take...
I was thinking practice targeting. All allies get plus one to attack with attacks that you grant, right?
Uh-huh.
What if we give them a damage bonus, too?
Yeah, that'd be great.
They get a damage bonus equal to your intellect?
Solid.
Yeah, because you add plus one to take the shot, right?
Yeah, or one plus your intellect. How
do
about
you,
that?
Do
yeah.
you use intellect on any other skill yet? In
not as command, unless not you command. Are unless you're doing something specific.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we'll say one plus your intellect, because even one damage is good.
Yeah.
Which is how Kelton got away with.
I was going to say, because you could easily build a no intelligence command mm-hmm. character, and you wouldn't notice until you got to step four.
It worked.
And then you'd be like, shit.
Very well.
Okay. Maybe two plus your intellect at that level, because at step four, you're pretty deep in.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives them a damage bonus equal to two plus your intellect. Or just maybe...
That's going to feel really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is a flat number good, or should we make it a damage class?
I think because it's granted, maybe
I
flat.
I like flat.
Because you can increase your intellect.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
So two plus your intellect. We're good
yeah.
on that? Sounds good, at least.
We haven't
run the numbers. But,
yeah. yeah, and also just a saving charge or something. Or
yeah, maybe an ally can
fearless
move.
Aid or...
You or an ally can move... their speed mm-hmm. as an immediate action, and if you land an attack against that, and if the attack hits against that enemy, they're automatically stabilized. That's it. It doesn't heal them, doesn't do anything like that. Just if they drop, you get the chance to stabilize them. It still invokes attacks of opportunity, it's mm-hmm. still all of that, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel good about that for command. Somebody would look at raising zombies and be like, that's way better than what command gets. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it sounds that way.
Until you realize that take the shot is dope.
This is going to happen way more often. It's going to be more clutch more yeah. often.
It just gives you that back pocket, like, you're in a good spot. It gives you something else to do.
Yeah, and it can literally be anybody. So if only the caster is not going to provoke an attack of opportunity for taking that,
yeah.
you can be like, do it anyway, man. Run up and just try to punch him.
Mm-hmm.
And... they're like, okay, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to spend four momentum. That's a great moment to be like, yeah, I run in, and I go, you get away from him! It's yeah. good drama. Okay. Bitch. Oh, get away from her, you bitch. That's what it was.
The Molly Weasley badass.
No, we were talking about aliens.
Yeah. I know, but I was talking about Molly Weasley.
Yeah, one of those is better.
Molly Weasley.
Obviously. Yeah.
Is Molly the mother?
Yes.
I only read the books. Mm-hmm. I saw the first movie and the third movie. And the third movie was, it's a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Having not read the books before I saw it, it was awful.
Yes.
Completely unfollowed. Like, I had no idea what was going on.
I have no frame of reference for that because I was so engrossed.
I mean,
by
80%
the
of the world
out.
Has no frame of reference for mm-hmm. that.
Let's move on. All right, champion.
Yeah. Champ, we got to be careful with.
I was thinking we could add more weapon-specific attacks.
Uh-huh.
We could add a feature that affects targets.
What are they? What's in their toolbox? What in their toolbox are they worried about? Like if you're going straight champ or you're doing champ doing into other things, what don't they do at all?
I think the biggest problem with champion is how vulnerable you are.
Uh-huh. Because I think this is the step after the utility where we can start rounding some edges, mm-hmm. expanding weaknesses, because they're going to become more and more exploitable.
Yeah,
especially if you do damage scaling.
And I was worried initially when I was writing this in. I was thinking, oh, how about flashy shit? Like where somebody attacks you and you redirect it into somebody nearby. And I'm like, that sounds like scoundrel.
Yeah.
Like that sounds like you're pulling some fuckery, not just straight up bravado and attacking. So what about a feature? I haven't got the full shape of this. But what about a feature that affects targets that have your banes on them? So challenge,
mm-hmm.
bleeds.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that could be a bane. If you're core malediction, you know,
I mean, yeah.
If you're core decay and you put malediction on them at the start of your turn and you're doing that counts. Something that makes it so that either that enemy has a harder time attacking mm-hmm. you or your effects do extra shit, you know?
Probably too much and maybe crazy, but what if there was just kind of a bravado armor?
So your armor increases... against the enemies that you have,
yeah.
Even
if you're not wearing the armor,
I wouldn't call it armor, but the idea that they do less damage to you,
your force of will,
No, yeah. Because they're just straight up scared of you.
Yeah.
Like, they aren't putting everything into it. There's kind of, everything is a little more pot shot because they can't put everything
maybe it's
it
only
they're too scared. So the idea that it would affect your bane would be great. So you do something, you put the fear of you in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't have something right now where...
And that increases their survivability. That makes a lot of class interplay or step interplay really, really fun.
Yeah, and we don't have something right now where if they if you drop an enemy to zero on your turn, you get a free attack against somebody.
No, I like that too.
You want to add both of those?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how much armor do you gain? 2 plus half your level?
I would say it should reduce, rather than calling it armor, because then you have to you have a different armor stat for anything. Just know that, yeah, just it's reduced damage from enemies.
I think
that you have an effect, or we're calling them banes and boons, right?
Yeah, but I think we do call it armor.
Okay.
And the reason for this is because that's how challenge works. You have a different attack and damage against these enemies. So It's something, if you're core champion, you're tracking anyways.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Because it makes me think of like Davy Crockett, like grinning down a bear to death.
Yeah.
You know? Just something so terrifying that...
Is it your composure? What stats is champion using?
Champion uses dexterity, strength, and endurance.
Maybe your endurance?
You're already using endurance for armor.
True. Could it just be strength, but like strength of will? Just strength of...
That would be composure.
I think... How we just do the same thing? 2 plus your composure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to do that?
Yeah.
All right. 2 plus your composure.
Because you would be a not damaging, perhaps not normally... like you could just build a character, not have a bunch of endurance, and then your whole plan is just to get there.
Okay. I want to... I think the wording of this will be important. What if it is, if you reduce an enemy to zero, If you're able to do an opportunity attack, you can move half your speed and do one against an enemy that you can reach.
Uh-huh.
And then enemies undergoing, just add both of those.
One, you can't stack multiple attacks in a turn because you only have one opportunity attack.
Yes.
Unless
you're champion. Or unless you're
Core Citadel, which is also still dope.
Yes. The nice thing about attacking an enemy and then immediately going to another enemy is that you may kill that other enemy if you pick it wisely. And that's why I want to add movement to this, because of the way that challenge works.
Yeah.
Because challenge is as many enemies. So maybe add that next person is challenged. So you drop an enemy to 0 hit points. You can immediately challenge somebody within half your speed if you can reach them, and then you get to make an opportunity attack.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Because
you could gain 2 to your challenge in one moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
You point out one guy, kill him, you immediately point at the next one, and that guy's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Full on slide.
Are they challenged even if you miss?
Yes.
All right.
Because the way challenge works now is you challenge somebody and you get +1 to attack and damage against that target. If they die, it persists against everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you challenge a new person, you get another +1 to attack and damage. So if we had a champion in that last encounter, that would have been disgusting. In Liam's campaign, core champion would have been really scary by the end of it.
Yeah, I think there were 9 opponents.
So actually,
There were eight.
Mm-hmm. I didn't kill the final one, did I? Missed opportunity attack.
Yeah.
Wait, would that count as my kill if I missed an opportunity attack? It wouldn't. The one that I missed the opportunity attack against, that they did 2 opportunity attacks that killed him, that wouldn't have counted as my kill, and I think that's fine. I think it's appropriate for the rules. That was great. That was a great moment, though. Imagine a team of marksmen with 1 tank with a reach weapon. That would be disgusting. just nonstop attacks of opportunity. Maybe just has 0 dexterity. So very low chance to
hit.
Very
purposely cannot hit.
Yeah, and just misses everything.
You don't even have a blade at the end of your spear. It's just a stick.
That would be really fun. But is that broken? I don't think so.
No. You'd have to do a lot of building and maneuvering to get things to work right.
Not to mention, that group sounds risky.
You'd probably also want to go command eventually just for take the shot on your own turn, depending on what your situation was.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. You could build a fun group. And also every marksman would just be a different flavor.
Yeah.
At some point.
Ice marksman would be pretty gross.
It'd be great.
Yeah. Probably the best version of that without a bow. The one with a bow is best marksman.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. I feel good about champion. And I think this is the last one I want to get into. Well, maybe we'll talk. We'll brainstorm about a couple others if you guys have some good ideas. But fire.
Yeah.
How about finally they get an ability to exclude a number of allies from their AoE damage equal to their composure.
Okay.
That work? Or intelligence? What do you think is more appropriate?
I mean, they only have one attack that can damage friendlies.
Nope. Rogue Star can.
You're right.
And they're going to get more. They'll get more blasts and shit.
Yeah.
By step 12, you should be a living nuke.
Yeah.
Right.
I like the idea of that. Not only are you a living nuke, you're an artist with it, so you can pick exactly where you're...
Mm-hmm. You can kind of shield them a little bit.
From... So encounter burst one?
Oh, you mean, so add that as a feature, and then add an encounter attack? So that I like that idea. Here's two other ideas I had. If you're dealing AoE damage against a single target, you can focus it for extra damage against that target.
That's good.
Or augment all weapons in a radius around you to deal extra fire damage for one attack.
I like that one best. That one's nice.
Because adding just a D6 to everybody's attacks might be better than you attacking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that should be an attack action. That's a big...
That's why I really like reveal weakness. I just point at somebody and say, next guy who hits them, extra D10.
It's fun.
That's amazing. You're not really doing anything, but you're doing something.
I feel like Gelt Command is like the ultimate path. It is like a perfect synergy.
Something I never would have thought of before this game was like...
A tiny rat general?
None of that. Yeah, but like just even the idea of being a general, you know?
Oh, the,
something
the
I never would have picked or done.
The idea of like fully cooperative tactics.
Yeah, because I've never played like that. Everyone's been just doing their own thing.
Every man for himself.
On their phone while everyone else is doing something.
God damn. We should put some sort of rule in our game where people take a negative to things if they're on their fucking phone.
Yeah. Unless your character sheet's on it or something.
Yeah.
Even
Jesus
then.
Christ. Okay, so why don't we do then... Let's just do these two. Let's exclude the allies from AoE damage, and let's have a Persian attack that augments all weapons in a radius.
I think the focus fire on larger enemies is better and more in flavor than ignoring enemies or ignoring allies.
All right. Let's add that next step then. So Liam's the only one here who's played straight fire.
Yeah.
They're both good.
These should be in the path of fire. There is worrying about allies, but nothing was worse than... Single armored targets were...
They hurt fire.
It's not even that it hurts. It was just, okay, I have two things. Those are done. Now I'm just flaming.
I wonder if you'd feel the same if you'd use the staff. Because you picked hands for a very specific reason. But a staff would have been very damaging.
Yes.
Against a couple of the targets. But I'm good in either case. These are both good. I don't dislike any of these. And you said you also wanted more blast attacks, which I 100% agree.
Yeah.
So maybe when they get their next blast attack, maybe step 5, add that exclude allies thing.
Yeah.
Because right now it's not too difficult to manage. Step 5, let's make it difficult. let's give you some crazy shit. Okay, I feel good about that. And I'm good for one more. You want to do one more?
Let's do one more.
Ice.
Yeah. All right.
I have nothing.
Okay, what what does ice do well?
Single target
control
and movement control.
Let's pick another type of control. What is the other way that you can control something?
I just had a new idea. I'm going to write it down so that I don't interrupt your thought with my thought.
I just want to hear your thought now.
Okay. So augment weapons in a radius to deal fire damage.
Okay.
What about augment one weapon until the end of the scene.
All right. I like that.
To do more damage than the fire.
Uh-huh.
Would that be cool?
Yeah. Well, they could do the same damage if you're... Well,
it's same damage, but a status effect? Like immobilizes or slows or something like that?
Yeah. If you get it off at the beginning of the scene, though, depending on how many... The only question is then how many characters do you have and how many of them are casters?
Well, you would know this before you get to step 4. Ice.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying the utility of the power is then like, because if you're the only fire mage in your party, if you're the only ranged character in your party, you're straight fire, or even whatever, you just get to step 4, and then everyone else is melee around you. Your whole party one turn is big. That's great.
It's true. Yeah.
But But there's a point where you're like, but the other feature is so good that it doesn't matter. Yeah. So just slow and an extra D6 or and
maybe more. Maybe a D8. Well, I think a D6 plus a status for the entire scene.
Yeah.
And you can shift it.
You'll probably...
Let's make it an at will. And you can shift it to a new weapon, but you have to be adjacent to that person.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But it lasts until the end of the scene.
Mm-hmm. Until you shift it.
Well, yes. Yeah. But it lasts on that weapon until the end of the scene.
Could there be a zone for ice? Like, we have to make an endurance check to get through it? Kind of like a hypothermia thing?
Maybe. Some kind of persistent thing? Like, maybe a once per scene, the area that you just affected becomes difficult terrain? So that would be a feature.
Do they have an area effect to immobilize?
They have an area of effect that immobilizes somebody, the first target it hits.
Okay.
And everybody else just damages.
Okay. Well, we could do the opposite with that, too. Instead of just damaging them, they're also slowed instead of immobilized.
This is tough to think of a feature for ice because they're so good already. Like, ice is one of the pads I worry about that it's just going to be too good the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the amount of control and single target damage, which is never bad.
But and this is a conversation we have. The control issue can be your ability to use it correctly falls heavier on the player.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you know, it's a fun ice mage ability in World of Warcraft.
What?
Ice block.
Mm-hmm.
You surround yourself with ice. You can't do anything. So maybe you don't heal. People can heal you,
uh-huh.
But you can't do anything. But you gain an armor. Armor of it's very high. You can't do anything, you can't see anything, you can't hear anything, and
but you can survive almost anything.
Well, let's say you can see through it, but that's it. It just makes you very tough and difficult to kill. It lasts one round.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say, is that something you could do to someone who's been knocked down?
I think you can only do it to yourself.
Only
to
yourself.
Okay.
I am okay with this being a reaction,
almost as a carbonite thing, like they're gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Carbonite.
Maybe
you take half damage. You're encased in ice for one round. You can't be damaged for this round.
Yes, for the rest of this round.
Right. No. For until the start of your next
turn. Yeah.
It ends at the start of your next turn.
Yeah. All right.
So if you're surrounded, you're dying anyway.
Yeah.
Like if it's a TPK, it's not avoiding that at all.
Well, there's also a great there'd be a fun fire and ice dynamic where an ice mage is surrounded. Blocks and then and fire is
Nova.
Like, I don't even have to care. I can't hit you.
Oh, that's true. Okay, so augment ice weapon, ice block. I want to give them one more thing because these are very. None of these are as good as having two skeletons.
Yeah,
like that's augment an ice weapon for an entire scene. Make that a swift action at will.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound fair? You have to be adjacent to
them. Adjacent. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Ice block. It's an immediate reaction. Let's make it a daily.
Yeah.
Does that sound good?
That's a big thing, yeah.
It's really good. And just make it a daily immediate reaction.
Yeah.
It's also it's not a attack daily.
No, it's immediate reaction.
Yeah. I'm saying, like, you could just also do your big ice thing, but then that's your ace in your hole.
Yeah. The limits are only on attacks. Yeah. So let's think of a feature then.
A little
let's
silly. Give them something fun. Maybe snowballs like the fire has.
No. I want to save that for later because they have the. They can create items out of ice.
Right. I was just thinking of how, like, a caster would fortify them, maybe even, like, to fortify their marksman or something like that.
I was thinking the next step, give them the golems that we created for ice. Like, there's only, like, one type, but it's good. Maybe you can only have one.
Yeah.
Whereas the necromancer makes a bunch. Like, ice can make one ice golem, and it's badass.
And you can get on it, like a mount.
You can ride. That'd be fun. Hmm.
Well, let's improve something that they already do.
Okay.
What's their step one encounter?
Step one encounter, I think it's the one where you move and you create a wall behind you.
Okay.
Of ice, but I'm going to double check.
You could even just make it, you no longer have to move. You can just put it somewhere.
Frigid sphere, 2d6 plus composure. You form a flying snowball that grows larger and colder as it travels before bursting on impact. Enemy is immobilized and all adjacent creatures are slowed.
You can't make that better.
It's really good.
Like, that's too good. That's really good already.
Ice is fantastic.
Maybe everything adjacent is immobilized as well.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
It's already good. It already does what it needs to do. I'm looking for any weak points or things where you're like, man, if this was just a little better.
So there's step two, enemies that strike you with melee are slowed until the end of the next turn. That's really good.
Yeah.
Their daily is Snap Freeze, which is a cone of 5. So it's a lot.
Yeah.
3d6 plus composure, and you concentrate before releasing a massive burst of cold. The air fills with snowflakes, and frost grows on all exposed surfaces. Affected creatures are slowed until the end of your next turn. That's good.
Yeah.
What if... What about some... Okay, so they have a lot of things that slow people. What can we do to a target that's already affected by a slow from you?
They can no longer... They no longer have an attack action.
Mm.
They're no longer slowed. They're impaired.
That's good.
Yeah, their weapon...
They just can't move.
Chance to drop their weapon or something becomes too cold or brittle.
What about they are mobilized? One person. On your turn... Only on your turn, not as a reaction, mm-hmm. not as an opportunity attack, not as something granted to you by anybody else. On your turn, you can change a target that has been slowed by you to being immobilized.
All right. Cold Snap.
Yeah. Well, Cold Snap, I think, is the name of their... Snap Freeze is their daily. So, but something like that where it just like... We'll figure out a name for it. That's not important. Mechanically, I think that's solid.
Yeah.
It's one target. Yeah. It works. I don't want to increase their damage. They're pretty good. Ice actually is the one Decay is one of those things where I'm like, I got to keep giving them like curveballs to make sure to keep within the idea of decay. Ice is like, make sure it doesn't go too far. It's really good already. Like fire, you're like, it's good, man. We can just add more blasts and shit. Ice is like, do I want to give him another attack? Like, I don't,
control is just so useful.
Yeah, they're really scary. Okay, all right. So I think that's where we'll stop for tonight.
All right.
We got those 5 ready for step 4. Obviously, none of it's being tested. We're going to test it eventually. Let's stop it here tonight. Let's dig into the other steps next time. Anything you guys want to bring up before we're done?
What about, I noticed, I have craft,
Mm-hmm.
What do we want to do with crafting?
That's a really good question.
What do we want to do with rituals? We keep talking about alchemy, but then we don't. Yeah, alchemy was great when she was going through the woods finding...
Yeah.
Things like that's great.
Do we want to allow people to make magic weapons, or do we want to allow people to socket regular weapons?
I think socket is the way to do it. I think that's not you can't just go like meh.
No, I think it takes a very high check to socket something. It depending on
I was thinking more like maybe traps or something that we'd spoken of.
That's scoundrel.
Scoundrel gets traps to use in combat. I think they could hand them off.
Yeah.
What else would people craft? In our opinion,
clothes, disguises,
okay,
cool. Chairs, boats,
skill items.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if somebody says, "Hey, I need a lockpick kit," here are the schematics.
Your blacksmith would just go, "Okay."
Yeah, you get a magic item. You need to take the sock. You need to take the item out of it without destroying it. That would work.
I like the idea of boat. Like if you're playing a long term game with more than one craftsman, you make your own boat.
Well, and I also think that. Currently, there's no armor scaling mechanic. Mm-hmm. Heavy armor is heavy armor. I think that's going to change.
Yeah.
We're going to have to name them, and they're going to have values. And the difficulty to craft each increases. Because it has to.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So despite magical augmentations, there should be armor that's just better.
Yeah. I do sooner rather than later, do want to start talking about augmented paths. Widening what can be done without having to roll up a whole new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about the small paths?
Yeah.
I disagree. I almost want to hardline say no to all of that until we finish the current ones.
All right.
Only because we'll have a better picture of all of them before adding to our baseline workload. You know what I'm saying? Because every time we make a change to the system, we have to change all of those as well.
Yeah.
So let's keep what we got. Right. You know. But any idea you have... I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
You know.
Like a field fortification kind of thing?
What, you mean like building a, like the Romans would do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool idea.
Like if you're in a bad area, you're not just going to lay down and go to sleep.
Yeah. That could be something, let's think about that. I'm not sure if that's craft.
I'm just thinking of more ways to do what we originally intended of actually doing the things you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like that idea a lot. Okay, so we're gonna end it there tonight. Thank you everybody for listening. This has been great fun. I'm really excited to dig into step four and really flesh out what these characters can do. As always, if you want access to the rule books, and we'll be coming out with a new one soon, once the format to incorporate our damage class tier, everything, and level comes into play, you can find it all on Patreon at the $5 tier at patreon.com/RPGFS. And additionally, at the $2 tier, you get all of our character sheets that we make, every revision. At the $1 tier, you get access to all the content that's cut out of these episodes, which it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. And also, it shows your support, which is important to us. We like to know that people enjoy what they're listening to. And at the $10 tier, if for those diehard fans, you get to create a custom NPC that we add into our database. And when we need somebody, we roll them out.
Yeah. If we need somebody to shoot a small hand crossbow at a giant bug.
But discussion is always free. I think that's the important
thing. Oh, yeah. That's true. If you want to talk to us, though, you can comment on any episode release. You can just go, if you have a Patreon account, you can comment on any of our posts. I highly encourage. You don't have to be a patron of ours, although I encourage that as well. But please, if you want to reach out to us, you can also reach out to us on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/RPGFS.
You can find us on Instagram at RPG from scratch, all one word.
And you can find us at Twitter at Homebrew Hombres.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.